You're listening to Wake Up Tucson. This podcast is a Bustos Media production on The Voice. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
All right, let's do this thing. Finish this week strong with Thursday and Friday coming on. Today's going to be a busy show. Larson is going to be here, and we're going to be talking about the Wildcat win and the Cardinal win, the Cardiac Cardinals.
You bet.
As we say, and preview what's going on this weekend in the world of foosball. We might talk about baseball, but not until the playoffs start when anyone actually gives a crap. You know, one of my buddies in New York's like, hey, the Mets made the playoffs. I went, burr. Oh, the Mets, burr. That was my reaction to that. And then we got Congressman Schweikert. One of the things I want to talk about Congressman Schweikert today is a mildly disturbing story about... let's see. This is judiciary Democrats just voted to support non-citizens voting in elections.
Huh?
So
how does that work? Explain that one to me.
So literally, it says in the amendment to the amendment. Yes.
There we go.
HR 8770. It says. subsection 1 to permit any non-citizen to vote in federal elections.
What?
2, to Wait. Encourage or require a state or political subdivision to permit any non-citizen to vote in state or local elections. So we'll get to that when we get there. So it's just a tease. Just a tease. We'll talk about, we'll talk about with David, and then I got Rashida Tlaib getting a dose of reality from bank CEO Jamie Dimon, and then she has a conniption. And the adults are not running this place, as we like to say. So then we have coming up in the third hour, Mike Quinn putting on the Rockin' for Heroes concert in Oral Valley. And then at 8:37, Ryan Heath is going to be calling in. He's the lawyer who went to the Board of Supes on Tuesday from the Gavel Project. And he's the one who says, I might be suing you very soon for vax mandates.
Yes.
So he will be... he'll be on the show in the third hour.
Good.
So that'll be a hoot and a holler, as we like to say. And then tomorrow we'll be busy. We have Malta Joe will be here for Food Friday. We're going to celebrate Maltese American Heritage Day. And he's going to bring non-pastizzi Maltese food for us. And we'll have a discussion about that. Van Buren's doing Gary Cooper flicks, which I'm sure Bunker is in much delight. I can't believe I gave him this much lead time. And then DeFilippo will be here. She has three things from the meeting Tuesday that are just awesome. And then it looks like, I'm not going to say it's totally happening, but it sounds like it's happening. We have Roger Klein from Roger Klein and the Peacemakers.
Sweet.
We'll be on tomorrow.
All right.
So,
fellow Charger,
it's going to be a heck of a Charger. What does that mean? Oh, you guys went to the same high school?
Correct.
What high school is that?
McClintock.
Ah, look at you guys. Now, my thing about Roger has always been, this one's such an easy one, okay? And this is why one of the various reasons why Tucson can't get out of its own way, okay? And that should be on the flag of the city of Tucson. Like our little, however you say, can't get out of our own way in Latin.
That, right next to the slippery slope. I like that as a logo too. That came up the other day. We're talking Pima County, but it applies either way.
We are the slippery slope. So I said this when we interviewed him the first time. I've mentioned this to the folks over at Visit Tucson. Okay. And I don't know what's going on. I like Felipe a lot. He hired Graham Hughes to be a second in command, which is a total loser move. Sad to say, that's a step backwards, you know. But Roger Klein has a tremendous following nationally. There are now. I'm sure Dan Murray's. Well, what do they call? Is there a name for a Roger Klein and a peacemaker follower? Are they all peacemakers? Whatever they call those people. It's like a deadhead, right? But it's a Roger Kleiner.
I think I've heard maybe it is peacemaker, but I think it's.
All right, all you nerds out there that are.
Where's John Farlow or Farlow. Dan Marley? Dan Marley. Good
Thunder!
Dan Marley is when we need him.
Marley. Let's see. Roger Klein, peacemaker's follower.
I know they all go to Circus Mexicus in, Rocky Point.
Of course.
That's the.
So this is what I want to say about Roger Klein and why Visit Tucson sucks. They don't do this. Okay. Roger Klein has an amazing following across the country. Okay. Like he goes to Wisconsin and sells out concerts, right? And you know what they are? Roger Klein followers are of the right age and income demographic. Okay. They are the 30 to 55er making money. Loves Roger Klein. Okay. Now, what does Roger Klein talk about in his songs? If you're not familiar with Roger's work, he talks about the romance of living on the border, right? Going to Mexico, living in the desert, having his desert dreams and with his woman drinking tequila and having a, you know, playing the guitar while the dusty winds, you know, whatever. Okay. That's us. Right? This is the easiest knockdown branding we could ever do, and we won't do it. And it has been sold to Visit Tucson before. Maybe under Felipe they'll change. Okay? But Visit Tucson has over a budget of over $10 million. They are not hurting for dough. Why not make Roger Klein? Now, yes, Roger's a Tempe guy. Who cares? Okay? Roger loves Tucson. He is a Tucson maniac. The last time we did an interview together, we talked for 10 minutes about Mexican food in Tucson. All right? So I'm just telling you, if you want to make money, which I know is a hard thing that anyone wants to do in this town, if you really want to do the rising tide that raises all boats in tourism, go get Roger Klein, pay him, I don't know, what are we going to pay? Quarter of $1 million a year to be the official troubadour of Tucson, Arizona. We would kill it. So he does these Circus Mexicus and Rocky Point. Just do another version of Circus Tucsonicus in Tucson, right? Tie it up with the 23 miles of Mexican food festival, right? Do all of that, right? And again, that's what we should be doing with the brand. We don't have a brand other than Luke Bell dies on Speedway and Craigcroft. That is an international story now.
Of course.
I mean, even the English papers are covering country music star Luke Bell dies in Tucson. This is our brand right now is not great, kids.
That's right? Nuts. He went missing, and 9 days later they found him OD'd on a street corner. That's awful.
Yeah, it's horrible. So again, Roger Klein should be the official troubadour and spokesperson for Tucson, Arizona. Now, I'm sure Rahina will say he's too white, right? And he betrays our heritage or something like that. Businesses need to make money, because you know what happens when they make money? They hire more people and pay them more money. I know that's really tough. I know.
I thought they exploited more people for third and fourth house.
Well,
on Martha's Vineyard, ironically.
That's what Cunningham said that time. When I called him when he was on Bert Lee's show that time. So let's do a little bit of a rundown. I got some mail here. Oh, this is great. This is the article that I couldn't open up. It's so funny. Someone put it on Facebook. This is, who is this? He's up in Oral Valley. Listener Ken. I didn't have you open it because I recognized that it was a real address. If it doesn't have an address, Matt opens it up.
That's the one I got to, as you step out of the room.
So it has the Kimberly Strassel piece, Peter Thiel losing Arizona. talking about Peter Thiel and Donald Trump basically abandoning Blake Masters. So this is Ken. I know you're big on Masters denouncing Mitch McConnell, but the ones he should go after are Thiel and especially Trump. Trump is big into branding, so he thinks his endorsement is all he needs to give. His endorsement may mean something in the primary, but beyond the general, it may lose as many votes as it attracts. Masters raged against McConnell in the primary, so you should not expect much back from McConnell. On the other hand, he's getting nothing from Trump, who he sucked up to for the endorsement. Trump's PACs are saving their dough for another Trump run. He's not a party type of guy. Arizona Republicans kill each other in the primaries, then expect the second life in the general election. We had a great chance to get rid of Mark Kelly, but we blew it by the end of the primary. Ken, a faithful listener. Anyway, I will let's go to break, and I will tell you of a discussion I had with a couple of folks that did focus groups up in Phoenix with potential suburban mom voters. Did it with two groups of 12 of them that all voted for Kelly a couple of years ago, and then a mix of suburban moms on the other side. And the part that they talked about, and we talked about these polls that are coming out from Trafalgar. Let's have some real talk, as we like to say. So,
are you familiar with the band Camel?
I am. Talented guys, but they've never produced kind of the earworms that got it. Like I said, hey, like I got to listen to more Camel, right? It is three big days. First day of autumn. We'll do autumn music tomorrow, okay, for the weekend. It's Bilbo Baggins' birthday from The Hobbit and Lord
of the
Rings.
And no pumpkin spice latte.
No, we're not doing any of that, I promise. But it's more importantly, International Progressive Rock Day, which of course is my Super Bowl. So I'm going to torture the crap out of you people before it's over. Wake up, 10:30 voice. The old Firth of Fifth by the Genesis Kids. For you Genesis Kids, is one of those hallowed tunes if you're into, you know, pre-80s. I know it's going to blow your mind. Peter Gabriel used to be the lead singer of Genesis. What? Used to wear some really weird costumes, too. You're on the Wake Up Tucson show, 10:30 of the voice. Local news and talk. Welcome to Progressive Rock Day, first day of autumn, and Bilbo Baggins' birthday. Bruce, your pal Bruce, cares about baseball. I know. That's okay. We all have our things. Different strokes for different folks. Let's talk about these polling. Right. And what I've seen from polling in the last so many years is, especially when campaigns are looking at these things, right, is it gives you false sense of maybe some either false sense of what's going on, or also maybe when it identifies maybe I've seen it in primaries when it identifies multiple candidates and they say, oh, this one's the one that's really got to worry about. And I've seen candidates over leverage resources to try to kill that one candidate. And then out of nowhere, the one that was polling low comes out and wins the whole thing. So, and we talked about it yesterday a little bit, right? The thing about polling is the idea that the samples are worse than they've ever been before. Right? No one wants to answer their phone. Half of them answer the phone by accident, and then they, you know, it's up to the pollster to kind of convince them to stay on the line and answer a few questions. Right? Because, of course, there's so much, I mean, what comes through your phone is so horrible. You know, it just turns you off, right? I mean, the idea that we all have scam likelies popping up on half of our phone calls, right? Then at the same time, they could be very nefarious where what they do is they record your voice when you go, hi, this is blah, 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 right? There's been scams where they've recorded your voice and called the people you know using your voice, right? I mean, this is all... So the idea that anyone's picking up their phone on a regular basis for something that says Trafalgar Group, or if that's even what pops up on the screen, of your screen. So the samples are worse than they've ever been before. And the Trafalgar Group one that says Mark Kelly and Blake are at a neck and neck, Kerry's up by four or five, Fincham's up 6 or 7, same with Honest Abe, right? So think about this. I think we're going to, I think they're talking about somewhere between three or four million people voting in the 2022 election. Got to do the math on the air now. So the sample, Matt, whip out the adding machine, please. I keep the tape on this too. I got to staple it to show my work, as we like to say. So if we take the Trafalgar Group sample is 1,200, right? So we do, I'm going to do 3.3 million. Just so we, I want to get this right. Okay. One, two, three. All right. So the sample that they're taking is 0.000036 of a sample. All right. And it's a crappy sample. It's not 10,000 people in a crappy sample. It's a really small, crappy sample. All right? And so these guys think the races are, they think Kelly's up 5 or 6 is what they think, for reals. Right? But the interesting part, they were talking about a focus group that they were doing. So 12 suburban moms that voted, all voted for Kelly in one group, and then 12 suburban voted for various folks in the other group, okay? But the one thing that was really interesting they said is they asked about, name ID, and then what do you think of when you hear the name, right? So we'll go to the governor's race. And they were telling, they said that, it said Carrie Lake, right? And what happened was a big majority of the 12 suburban moms, right, regurgitated what they heard in commercials. Right? That's what they got. Then, when they asked about Katie Hobbs, is they didn't know who the hell she was. So one of the things, so this is the thing that's interesting. So the negatives on, the negative part on the hits on Carrie Lake, because of course the negative, just it's just human lizard brain kind of stuff, right? You respond more to the negative. They remembered negative points about Carrie Lake, and then the part at the end where Katie goes, "Ah, Katie Hobbs, and I'm going to save your freedoms and fix the border in your skulls," right? They didn't even know who she was. There was one mom who knew that she was because they worked together in the social worker business years ago. But no one else knew Katie, even though, so think about this, right? If you're Katie Hobbs and you want to talk about a self-esteem problem, you've spent, $7 million on TV commercials over the last 6 weeks, and a large portion of that very important don't even know who you are. So as we like to say, Carrie Lake, you got that going for you. So again, this lack of money thing, I mean, think about it. So again, to just tell you how, Carrie really needs money, there was this meeting up in Phoenix with a lot of business owners, right? Bigger business owners. And they told me that she spent, during their discussion, she said 8 to 10 times how great of a governor Doug Ducey was. Because they all like Doug. So, where she spent a year and a half saying that Doug Ducey was a junior antichrist. But there's no atheists in foxholes, kids. Ryan Larson's coming up next. Welcome to World Prog Rock Day. 10:30 The Voice, local news and talk. 6:35 in the morning. You're on Wake Up Tucson. Let's go to the best sports intern in America. You bring up the best stories when poor Larson's on the show.
Ryan told me about this one.
Well, Ryan Larson, welcome aboard. So what is going on at that alma mater of yours? You leave, right? And the place loses its mind. So we had pretty much two nude women running around body painted at a game. Then Matt, what do you got? Let's go to the Matt Utah football. Who knows? I was going to say this nuclear reactor news desk. Go, please.
Female Utah student arrested after threatening to detonate nuclear reactor if Utes lost. A female Utah student, 21, threatened to detonate a nuclear reactor if the Utes football team didn't win on Saturday. She was booked into Salt Lake County Jail Wednesday for investigation of making a threat of terrorism.
Did you know this girl?
No. I don't know who it is. Don't worry. I'm not involved in this, Chris. I love when the Utes win football games. I'm not about to resort to domestic terrorism.
But did it move the betting line?
Utah has a nuclear reactor on campus.
But did it move the betting line?
That's true. I don't
probably
know.
Probably not.
I don't know.
Utah covered either way, so we're good.
Then the other football, non-football, I just want to give horrible kudos, that means bad, to the Oregon fans for a disgraceful chant at the BYU game. What's going on with these? I thought those are the enlightened people up at Eugene, Oregon.
Apparently hate speech is only in effect when it's against yourself or people you like, but once you start saying about other people, it's no longer hate speech, so that's cool.
Think about this. All those snowflakes at the University of Oregon with the cancel culture and all this stuff literally started saying F the Mormons, chanting that during the game against BYU. Good, nice folks. Good humans there. Anyway, let's get to the foosball. We'll start with the University of Arizona. Tell me about their performance against the Bisons.
That's a big win for Arizona this week against North Dakota State. And normally you wouldn't think it's worth celebrating winning a game against an FCS team. But as we covered last week, North Dakota State's a really good team and probably is Arizona's best win of the season because of how bad San Diego State looks.
Right.
And for Arizona, we got back to a reliable Jaden Delora. We've had two good games from him and one really terrible game. And so I think it's going to be a roller coaster all season, what type of quarterback play we get from Delora. But he was better this week. No turnovers, which is huge. And he was also helped out by the running game being significantly better than it was against Mississippi State. Arizona had 160 yards on the ground. They averaged almost 5 yards a carry, and they got a lot of help from a lot of different players, with five different players having rushes of over 10 yards. So Arizona's offense was just significantly more balanced than it was against Mississippi State, and we saw that translated to greater offensive efficiency. And I think when we get the best out of Delora this season, it's going to be when the offense is more balanced. Because Delora, from what we've seen so far, when the entire weight of the offense is on his shoulders, when it's up to him to create offensively in the passing game, or to make things happen just because the running game is so stagnant, he's just not as effective because he'll force things. He'll throw into double coverage, and the offense just tends to stall when it's all on Delora. He needs that balance. He needs that help from the running game and the rest of the offense to be as effective as possible because he's just not capable yet at this point of his career of taking over games and carrying things himself. So that was really good. That was encouraging to see from Arizona that their offensive line played pretty well and wanted the line of scrimmage, opened up the running game a little bit. And on the defensive side of the ball, it helped that Arizona finally won the turnover battle. They had two turnovers against San Diego State. They had three against Mississippi State. So it's going to be big for Arizona when they're playing against teams that are equally or more talented than them, which you could argue that North Dakota State is. It's going to help if you don't turn the ball over a million times and give the other team extra chances. Now, there were some concerns defensively because of how well North Dakota State ran the ball. They only threw for 120 yards, but they ran for a ton of them because mainly that's how North Dakota State runs their offense. They love to keep the ball on the ground. But we've seen that Arizona, including against Mississippi State, can get bullied by physical teams with better athletes. The defensive line just hasn't been strong enough to hold up really so far this season in the running game when you play against a really physical team. And based on the teams that Arizona has coming up in a couple weeks, the Oregons, the Washingtons, the Utahs, they're going to need to improve that, or they're likely going to get bullied offensively or defensively going forward.
You go.
I was just going to say, I think for Arizona going forward, their offensive staff is pretty good at creating an offensive scheme that can make up for talent deficiencies that they have. But it's harder on the defensive side of the ball to scheme around your talent deficiency just because you're reacting to what the opposing offense does. So if the opposing offense is bigger and faster, it's just harder for the defensive lack of talent to make up for that. And so I think Arizona, it's good they took advantage of the North Dakota State win. And it's good to see what the offense can do, but the defense is going to need to step up going forward a little bit. It's just going to get harder for them.
You know, I was watching, because the lovely Mrs. D is an LSU fan, we did watch a good portion of LSU-Mississippi State, right? And now LSU won that game by running, right? The quarterback and the one right. running back, right? But there were so many times where the LSU quarterback dropped back and everyone was kind of covered. Right, there was a lot of coverage, either sacks or hurries that happened, and I'm sitting there going, you know, Jaden Delora threw three interceptions, and now I understand even more. They got a pretty good defense when it comes to the pass, and he just forced stuff. So that's where we're at, and you learn and you move on.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, Jaden Daniels is LSU's quarterback. Many are familiar. He used to be ASU's quarterback.
Yeah.
He's very similar to Jaden Delora in many ways. He likes to get his first read, and then he likes to run if it's not there. And so when he's able to run the ball effectively, when the team is opening up things so that his first option is available, he's a pretty decent quarterback. But against Mississippi State, he was largely ineffective. And they struggled to move the ball. And that's going to be the thing for Arizona going forward is, can they open things up early? Because if Laura's not getting his first option, if Cowan or McMillan is not open immediately, he struggles more to make the right read and to make a smart play. And so Arizona's going to need that running game to be effective going forward.
Tell me about so California is coming off of a win in South Bend against Notre Dame. How do these two teams match up on Saturday?
I think this game is going to be first of three touchdowns wins, honestly. Cal has a pretty crappy offense and a very good defense, which, as I talked about, probably plays in Arizona's favor because they can scheme a little bit offensively to score some points, and their defense is not going to have to be perfect in this game. Cal's not a type of offense that's going to overpower them because, yeah, Cal almost just beat Notre Dame. They lost by a touchdown. Notre Dame, we found out, it's pretty terrible this season, and they were playing a backup quarterback, and Cal had a chance to tie the game at the end, but it never felt for a second like Jack Plummer, Cal's quarterback, was going to actually lead them to a touchdown to tie the game. So Cal's going to have very few explosive plays on offense. They can't run the ball. They average 3 yards a carry for the season. So it's really going to be, if Arizona's defense can limit that run game, if they can keep Cal from having an effective run game, as they haven't shown they have all season, and Arizona's offense can put up, I would say, 28 points almost guaranteed wins this game.
Gotcha.
If they can do that, if they can avoid turnovers, giving Cal short fields and easy scores, Arizona can definitely win this game. It is on the road, and their defense is going to have to play decently well, but they're not going to be overwhelmed for sure. It's just minimizing those mistakes of either allowing explosive plays on the defensive side or giving up turnovers on the offensive side. And if Arizona does that, they should be able to win this game because Cal, in a home game, they barely beat UNLV, who's not yet a very good group of five team. They won that game 20-14. Cal's averaging like 18 points a game in their FBS games. So it's not a great offense. Score 21, they should be fine.
Let's go to Matt Neely again for the Arizona State leaking
so there's this
scandal
report going around. So it's the old thing we talk about in politics where one media outlet reports it, then everybody else cites it. And
sure.
It's anonymous, so it's an unnamed source. Okay. So just to set
this is Tucson. We're really willing to go with the unnamed source.
But The Athletic. And Ryan, The Athletic is considered a reliable outlet?
Yep.
Yeah. So The Athletic is reporting that staffers, either in football or Arizona State Athletics, were leaking intel on the Sun Devils' game plans to opposing coaches to kind of, you know, hasten the process of Herm Edwards getting $10 million to leave. Which, on one hand, is kind of funny because it's like
million.
ASU dysfunction. But on the other hand, the implications, you know, of throwing a game, that's a little weird. That there's actually, if there's truth to this, there's some other implications.
So Ryan, just real quick, in 40 seconds or less, tell me about the decline of Herm Edwards. What was really going on that any of this is true, that it was getting that bad that people possibly could be leaking to the opposing team? What talk about the implosion over there.
Yeah, so it started off fairly promising with Herm Edwards. ASU had a couple winning seasons, won 8 games in a season. And then there were the recruiting violations during the COVID season. You had them improperly hosting kids on campus in closed buildings, which not only was a violation for Herm Edwards and his staff, but it was putting everyone else in the athletic department at risk of being fired for violating those rules. And then you have coaches getting thrown under the bus for that. Plenty of his staff was leaving because of a dysfunctional work atmosphere. And then recruiting completely fell off in the last 2 years. Arizona's been disastrous with recruiting. They had one of the worst, or ASU's been disastrous with recruiting, had one of the worst recruiting classes of any Power 5 team. Notably, the Campbell Camels, an FCS program, had a better recruiting class than ASU this last year. You've probably never heard of the Campbell Camels. And so all of that combined with the fact that if you let Arizona back into the race, these last few years, Arizona has been largely dysfunctional and pretty much a mess. ASU could have really stomped out Arizona and established themselves as the power in the state. And they didn't do that. They let Arizona back into it. If anything, U of A now has a head start in their rebuild and looks like they're going in a far better direction than ASU is. And so that was all a mess. And honestly, if you knew after three games that you could have fired Herm Edwards, you should have fired him last season. You should not have let him come into the season, kept his reign on the team. You should have fired him last season. And honestly, ASU should probably fire the AD Ray Anderson as well for the whole disaster that has been Herm Edwards.
Who was Edwards' agent before when he was a pro coach, right?
Yep. Yeah, he hired his buddy. He wanted to bring in NFL-type leadership, and it didn't work, and then he stuck with him too long. And now ASU is in a terrible spot.
You know what I think bought Herm the extra time? The 70-3 or whatever win, like 2 years. I think that just bought him like so much goodwill in Tempe. The thumping over U of A a couple years ago at the end of Sumlin's time here.
Yep. So, all right, we got to go to break.
Yeah, they kept being U of A.
We got to go to break, and we come back. We got to cover the Cardinals' cardiac win in Vegas. We got to preview my girl Elsa's Steelers-Browns game and talk about the NFL weekend before it's up. Congressman Schweikert at the top of the hour. Wake up, Tucson. 10:30 The Voice, local news and talk. Oh, the second home by the sea. Very fun live if you ever watch this one. This one's the kids from Genesis. Let's get back to Ryan Larson, best sports intern in America. Ryan, welcome back, bud.
Thanks, Chris.
Cardinals, train wreck, sec first half, and then crazy second half.
Yeah, that's fair. Through the first six quarters of the season, the Cardinals looked like they were probably the worst team in football. And then the last two quarters, they were great. So in this game against the Raiders, they trailed 20-0 at half, and they allowed the Raiders to score on the first four possessions of the half. And then in the second half, the offense finally comes alive. Kyler Murray starts making some plays, especially with his legs, which is why he's one of the best athletes in football, is just because he does things that no other quarterback really can do with the way he's able to run and create when things are going well. But the real credit for the comeback really goes to the defense for finally figuring some things out. They held the Raiders to 3 points in that second half and overtime period after just being absolutely terrible to start the season. So that was really huge for the Cardinals. And then Kyler Murray makes some of the most incredible two-point conversion plays you will ever see, one of which he was scrambling for 20 seconds on a two-point conversion before running into the end zone. And then over time, the Cardinals, they recover a fumble by Hunter Renfrow, and they take it back for a touchdown to win the game. So just an utterly absurd game for the Cardinals. But honestly, this probably saves their entire season because teams that start 0-2 have only made the playoffs 11% of the time. And it hasn't happened even once in the last three seasons. So by getting to 1-1, the Cardinals keep their chances of making the playoffs legitimately alive. And hopefully this second half that they had against the Raiders is what the team is going to be going forward rather than what we saw through the first six quarters of the season, because it was rough to start, but that second half looked encouraging. And we'll get a sense of how real this is this week because the Cardinals are playing the Rams at home. So they need to keep the momentum rolling against a Rams team that has looked kind of shaky so far. But the Cardinals are still three-point underdogs.
Tell me about the Steelers-Browns tonight. I got to cover this for Elsa before she gets to work. What do we look for tonight?
Well, it's a battle between Jacoby Brissett and Mitchell Trubisky at quarterback. So not the most exciting thing we've ever seen.
That's
and
true.
Both teams coming off of pretty rough losses. The Steelers lost to the Patriots, and we've just seen that Mitchell Trubisky is not going to be the long-term answer at quarterback for the Steelers. Got to start considering when Kenny Pickett is going to play for them at quarterback. But for now, that offense is just – it's pretty bad. It's rough to watch. Mitchell Trubisky had 170 yards on 33 attempts and one of the worst picks you'll ever see. And they just can't run the ball because the offensive line is terrible. So it's up to the defense to win those games. But Jacoby Brissett is not an awesome quarterback. So the Steelers can win games by their defense. It's just going to be a matter of which defense plays better in this game against a not very good quarterback.
Cardinals hosting Rams, 125 Sunday. Is this, I assume this is going to be a very tough, if the first six quarters of the Cardinals show up, this will be a long afternoon up in Glendale?
Yeah, that's the question, is which version of the Cardinals show up now. The Rams look shaky. They got blown out by the Bills in the first week of the season, and then this past week they played the Falcons, who are not a good team, and the Rams were up huge early in that game, and they allowed the Falcons to come back from a 21-point deficit and have a chance to tie or even win the game at the end, and they managed to hold them off. But the Rams' offense has not been as crisp as it was last season when they won the Super Bowl. Cooper Kupp is still amazing at wide receiver, but Stafford has been suspect at times, throwing some really bad picks, and that defense has not been as dominant as we expected it to be based on the last couple of seasons. And so the Cardinals should be able to score, but the Rams have also really had the Cardinals' number these last couple of seasons. So Sean McVay has known how to out-scheme Cliff Kingsbury, and I think the Rams probably win this game. I wouldn't, especially after these first two games, I wouldn't feel confident betting on the Cardinals right now.
And then I see, like, the Bills-Dolphins, that's kind of a game, right?
Oh, yeah, that's going to be a huge game. That's probably the game of the week to watch if you're only going to watch one game, because the Bills look like the most dominant team in football. They destroyed the Rams in week one, and then on Monday Night Football this past week, they absolutely dominated the Titans, 141-7. And so Josh Allen has just been incredible. He's the early leader for MVP, no question. That offense is almost impossible to stop, and the defense added Von Miller this season. They look really good. And so watch this Bills team, because right now they're the Super Bowl favorite, and no other team other than maybe the Chiefs looks all that close to them. And then Miami has been a pleasant surprise, with Tua throwing for 6 touchdowns against the Ravens this week, coming back from a 21-point deficit in the fourth quarter. And they're really the only legitimate threat to the Bills in the AFC East.
And they're down in Miami, so we'll see how it goes. Well, great job as always, sir.
Thanks, Chris. Always great talking some football and some questionable decisions by college students because of football.
Thank you. I'll never look at a nuclear reactor the same way again. So, sir, have a great weekend.
You too, Chris. Thanks.
Ryan Larson, best sports intern in America. Coming up, U.S. Congressman David Schweikert. Wake up. 10:30 The Voice.